That's the sound of one of the world's most powerful eagles. With their long wingspan, and at a bulky 4 kilograms or more, the martial eagle is also Africa's largest species of eagle, dominating the sky they fly in as they take their place as an apex predator. Hello, I'm Tom Morath. I'm the Deputy Head of Living Collection at the Hawk Conservancy Trust, and whether it be kites or kestrels, harriers or hawks, I've a passion for birds of prey and understanding their place in the natural world. Our podcast, Nature's a Hoot, is a way to delve deeper into the world of these winged predators, to understand their natural history, their current status in the wild, and how we can support them through conservation efforts into the future. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the awesome martial eagle. This is a raptor with an impressive list of prey items, but sadly, an equally notable list of threats. The martial eagle, standing at 93 centimetres tall and a wingspan of over 6 feet or almost 2 metres, this eagle is a sight to behold in the open savannas of Africa and the semi-deserts south of the Sahara. Here, they may prey on anything from other smaller birds like francolin or guinea fowl, even up to the size of white storks. Young impala and even some species of primates can be on the menu for the martial eagle. I wanted to find out more about this impressively powerful bird, so who better to speak to than a scientist who's been studying them and other African eagles for over a decade.
The martial eagle is like pure grit. They are the toughest eagle in Africa, in my opinion. People always want to know which is the biggest eagle, and their wingspans actually are quite similar to each other, but martial eagles come in like bulkier and heavier than various eagles, so they are the biggest.
That's the voice of Dr. Megan Murgatroyd, a conservation biologist based in South Africa as part of her work with Hawk Watch International. Megan's life work is studying birds of prey, especially large eagles. I asked her about her career and her work with Hawkwatch International.
So in my role, I work for Hawkwatch International. I'm their Associate Director of African and Asian Programs. It's a little bit of a mouthful, but essentially I look after and I develop their research, which occurs outside of the US because they're based in the US and I'm based in South Africa. So my focus is on African raptors, and then I'm also interested in Asian raptors just because they have a lot of very endangered and little known species. So yeah, my work is about sort of researching and conserving raptors in a nutshell. Hawkwatch International is an NGO based in the US, in Utah actually. And initially they were founded in like 1986, as an organization who are monitoring raptor migrations, especially in the US where the raptors do these like massive annual migrations like south to north, north to south, and particularly in the fall or the autumn, they're traveling along these like established highways and they're really easy to count at that time of year. So Hawkwatch have been monitoring their population trends by counting them on mountaintops for 37 years or something. But since then, the organization has grown a lot and we have kind of three main pillars of work. We look at research, conservation, like applied conservation, and education.
I understand that obviously we're here to talk about martial eagles today, which is the subject of the podcast today, but sort of understand that your PhD was about another African raptor specifically. Can you tell us a bit more about that species?
Yeah, sure. My PhD was on various eagles, which are indeed my first love.
What a bird.
Yeah, they're a fantastic bird, and I got to study them in an amazing area in the Cedarburg Mountains, in South Africa, which is like for them like typical pristine Varroa's eagle habitat. And then adjacent to the Cedarburg is an area known as the Sandveld, which is used for potato farming a lot. So the Sandveld in comparison is quite flat. It has these like sort of hills where every little hill in the Sandveld has got a pair of Varroa's eagles nesting on it. So then I could like the PhD, or the aim of the PhD, was trying to compare the ecology of the two populations, the Sandveld versus the Cedarburg, with the idea that as Varroa's eagles are typically known as being very specialist predators of rock hyrax, and they're probably doing much better in the Cedarburg than the Sandveld. And so that's what all of my hypotheses were built around. And after 4 years of collecting breeding data in both areas and GPS tracking them and having cameras at the nest, basically I found out kind of the complete opposite. And Varroa's eagles in the Sandveld in the agricultural area were breeding way better than the Cedarburg eagles. They had a much more diverse diet in the Sandveld. They were taking birds and tortoise and rock hyrax, but a mixture of things. And yeah, just doing really well. I think the lifestyle in the Sandveld was actually just maybe slightly easier. There's good thermal uplift. There's yeah, this diversity of food that they've seemed to have adapted to, and the temperatures are a bit milder.
Megan has had an impressive career on the front line of research work with African raptors. I must admit to being a little jealous of her time spent observing Varroa's eagles in the wild. I can happily say, however, that I have had the privilege of seeing the martial eagle in the wild while supporting the African white-backed vulture monitoring in South Africa for the Hawk Conservancy Trust. There's nothing quite like seeing this huge eagle up close with prey in its talons, and Megan agrees that there's something very mesmerizing about them.
They are the only species in their genus, so evolutionary speaking, they're quite distinct. They have a really wide distribution, like throughout sub-Saharan Africa, but they occur at a pretty low density, mostly in like open savannas and grassland types of habitats. So, yeah, seeing a martial eagle is always a special thing. And yeah, what makes them special? They're a unique species that's sadly declining, and of course, they're apex predators. Often you'll see them perched on like a prominent tree or something, where they're sitting there and they're looking for an opportunity to ambush something. As an adult martial eagle will hold a territory all year round. So if you know that there's a nest in an area, you are likely to find it in that kind of area. There's no migration. They don't range particularly far from the nest. From tracking data, we can see that they probably range around 5 kilometers from a nest. That translates to something like 100 kilometer square home range. If you find a nest, it's usually it's a big structure in the highest fork of a tree, built from sticks. Got quite a range of a diet actually, and we've been putting cameras in the nests in Kruger to see what prey is delivered to the chick, and we've seen so the male eagle, because he's smaller than the female eagle slightly, the males often hunt a lot of game birds, things like guinea fowl, francolin, spur fowl. And females, at least in Kruger, take a lot more reptiles and mammals. And when I'm talking about reptiles, it's actually rock monitors. And they can be like up to 1.5 meters long, and it's a heavy, strong lizard. And yeah, the ones that we've seen delivered to the nest, we estimate they're around 3 kilos of meat brought up there. They're obviously also known, like all the impressive things you see or hear about them taking down, like small antelope. It's not a very common prey item, but it does happen. And we recorded a number of common duiker and steenbok, which are probably around 6 kilograms. And even one juvenile common reed buck, which is probably around 8 kilogram prey item, more than the eagle itself. So they can take down these really large animals as well, but their more regular prey items are slightly smaller and more manageable.
Given their impressive size and capabilities, it's difficult not to feel in awe of the martial eagle. It's a sobering thought that the numbers of these birds are declining in the wild, though. A recent study shows that martial eagles have declined by up to 60% in the last 20 years in South Africa, and, as a result, monitoring projects have been established to try and work out the causes of these declines. Anything from understanding their breeding behaviour to their choice of diet for individual pairs could be vital in supporting efforts to halt their decline. And this is the work that Megan has been a part of.
So martial eagles, I guess, in general, are not doing that well. They're currently classified on the IUCN Red List as endangered. A recent analysis actually suggested that they should be reclassified as critically endangered because their declines in some parts of their range are so severe. In some parts, like West Africa, they're almost disappearing entirely. Our specific work on martial eagles was started by my colleagues in the Fitzpatrick Institute at the University of Cape Town, led by Arjun Amar. They quantified the declines of martial eagles in South Africa around 2012, and basically found that in South Africa, we're looking at sort of 60% population declines across the country. And even inside protected areas, so Kruger National Park is our largest protected areas, and martial eagles were found to still be declining inside the park.
And what do you think from the studies so far, what are the main threats that the species is facing?
Million-dollar question. there's a lot of things which are potentially going wrong for this species. There's habitat loss outside, well, even inside some protected areas. There's electrocution, collisions with power line. Outside of protected areas, there's persecution. More recently in South Africa, we've got problems with wind turbines as well. We've seen collisions with wind turbines. So I guess essentially overall, martial eagles are threatened by human development. And their range is just contracting to protected areas. From our work, GPS tracking individuals, some young individuals which left Kruger National Park and moved outside the protected areas, we've recorded one instance of electrocution, I think at least two of persecution. We've had a tagged eagle recovered from a snare. It could have been accidentally caught as bycatch of other poaching activity, but we've also had another tag which we recovered. The tag, the harness had clearly been cut off the bird and the tag was just left hanging in the tree. We don't know what happened to the bird, but we can only suspect that it wasn't
foul play.
Yeah. So those kind of things are happening. And then their habitat is just changing. 12 martial eagles in South Africa so far have been killed by wind turbines. And then in Kruger itself, actually, like, these aren't really threats, but other mortalities that we've recorded on our nest cameras. We had one incubating adult eagle which was killed by a honey badger, and we've had at least two chicks eaten by leopards climbing into the nest. So there's a whole bunch of like natural things going on as well.
God, so pretty much any threat that could be faced by a raptor is being faced by martial eagles, really. So you mentioned there about putting GPS tracking on the birds. That's obviously part of this project. Why use GPS tracking for these eagles? What does it help you to do?
GPS tags, I mean, for any species, can tell us all sorts of things that we wouldn't know from our traditional monitoring. So we get to also learn how and why where birds die, things about their behavior, how they're using the landscape. Yeah, and in a kind of detail that we can start analyzing things like habitat preferences, what areas do they really rely upon? What is their home range size? For martial eagles, we've been able to use the GPS data to actually look at and analyze their breeding productivity without us even going to the nest. So you can look at how frequently they return to the same point and then infer if that bird is breeding or not and if it successfully rears a chick. One of the things that I've spent a lot of time using GPS data to do is look at wind turbine collision risk. So you can look at why or where what is associated with their flight altitude, and build that into sort of statistical models, and then you can predict collision risk for them in new areas before developments are even built. So you can have these tools that we can use in industry to say, like, okay, this is a good place for a turbine. It's very unlikely an eagle's going to fly here, or it's a really bad place. Can we replan? So yeah, there's a bunch of really exciting things that we can use GPS tracking data for, and things that, yeah, we just otherwise wouldn't be able to know or do.
Yeah, the wind turbine thing is sort of a difficult one, isn't it? Because we're all in the same boat of wanting to find more like green energy alternatives. Of course, that's what we want for our planet to be more sustainable, and so we should be, cheering at the chance to have more wind farms. But actually, it seems to be a huge problem, particularly for large birds in general, migratory bird species. I mean, it's definitely from the outside looking in, you'd think these structures are absolutely enormous. Why on earth are they such a big problem for a bird? You just think they'd just fly around something like that. What is happening with that?
No, totally, I agree. And I mean, I really like the term that it's a bit of a green dilemma. You know, like
Yeah.
it's we want to conserve them, but we want green energy. What are we going to do? And I think that, like, I mean, for these raptors that are hitting them, and it's happening all over the world. So
Yeah.
we know it's a problem, and I don't know if we really know exactly what's going on, but I assume that most of these raptors are like flying around, they're looking down, they're looking like directly down for their prey or whatever. They're not aware, they've never evolved in an environment where they've needed to look ahead of them. They've been the king of the skies. You know, they don't need to keep checking if they're going to collide with something once they're in free flight. So I guess they're not looking, and by the time they do realize there's a problem, it's almost too late. There's a bit of a suction vortex on that turbine as it's turning. So maybe they almost get sucked into it. And yeah, these blades are just going so fast, they come around, and I think they mostly knock them from above. So the blade comes down on top of the eagle or raptor as it's flying underneath. And I suppose at the end of the day, there's no learning experience. There's no like, ouch, that hurt. It's like one hit and you're dead. So how do you get used to that being in your environment?
For each new eagle that comes along, it's a brand new experience for them. Yeah. I always think they look like they're moving really slowly just because they're so large, but actually the tip of that blade is moving super fast, isn't it? So it's not just like, oh, I'll just move out of the way once they're in that flight path. So yeah, great to hear about the tracking units. How do you go about fitting the units? Are they fitted to young birds before they fledge, or do you need to trap adult birds? How do you go about it?
Mostly we're trapping adult birds. We have fitted some to young birds as well, but most of our work has been interested in the adults, partly because the adults are like the most valuable portion of the population as such. You know, like losing adults is really bad for population trends. So yeah, we trap adults and we fit the tag as a little backpack. It's like a little harness that goes on to the bird. My method, or we sew the tag at the front of the bird so that eventually the stitches that we sew it on with can break down, and the whole tag can eventually fall off the bird. Maybe after around 5 years, we tend to see them falling off again.
And it's a pretty small, like lightweight thing for the bird to carry around. It for their size, it's not like a big, bulky pack that they're carrying around.
These units are amazing, and they've dropped in size as well considerably. When we first started this research, we were using 90 gram units, which is still pretty small, but now even just like 5, 10 years later, we're using 30 gram units, which is a tiny percentage really of their body weight. A Marshall Eagle's weighing 3 kilograms for a male and pushing over 5 kilograms for a big female. So
A
it's a
tiny
little
percentage
bit.
of their overall weight. Yeah. So, I mean, I think I can guess the answer to this question, which it might be a bit of a depressing question, I suppose, but in your professional opinion, what does the future look like for the species?
Yeah, it is a bit depressing. Right now, I'd say it's not really looking that great for them. They need large protected areas. I'm kind of optimistic that martial eagles will persist, but they may become like isolated to smaller and smaller areas. And yeah, essentially we need to ease up on human pressures for them.
After the slightly doom and gloom question there, a bit of a fun question we ask everybody, which is if you could be a species of bird of prey, which species would you choose to be and why?
Oh, I think you might already know the answer to this question. It would have to be a Varroa's eagle. A day spent soaring over the Cedarburg Mountains as opposed to standing in a tree, I'd definitely be the happiest Varroa's eagle out there.
An excellent choice. I'm sure you'll agree. With passionate scientists like Dr. Megan Murgatroyd at the very forefront of conservation of impressive species like the martial eagle, it does offer some hope for their survival into the future. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Megan Murgatroyd, for the time and support she gave towards putting this episode together. If you'd like to know more about the research work we undertake at the Hawk Conservancy Trust, you can explore the conservation research pages on our website, hawk-conservancy.org/conservation-research. Loads more bird of prey content can also be found on our social media pages. You'll find us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and perhaps consider leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts.